helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. In the preamble of the Constitution, we find the reason for that document, the purposes behind its drafting. One of those reasons was to establish justice. Not social justice or economic justice, but just plain justice, which, according to Noah Webster in his 1828 dictionary, is the virtue consisting of giving to everyone what is his due, or practical conformity to the laws and to the principles of rectitude or rightness in the dealings of men with each other. So if we are to have justice in America, we need both just laws and the just application of those laws. So today, I want to take some time, I want to look at some recent events and see if we have truly established justice in America, or has the virtue and principles of rightness simply been lost to us? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm so glad you could join me today. You know, it's funny. This word justice seems to have been, well, I don't know if I'd say lost to our vernacular or co-opted. You know, we've all heard the chants, right? No justice, no peace. What I find amazing is those chants are usually involved people that are interested in everything but justice. Like so much of our language today, the term justice has turned into a new meaning. If a crowd doesn't like the outcome in, say, a court case, then they cry, no justice, no peace. Not asking whether or not assuming that any court opinion that differs from their desired outcome is unjust. Now, I don't know if this is a product of the rampant narcissism that seems to have swept through this entire society, or the fact that our education system is been taken over by a political agenda rather than a cultural one, but my guess is probably a combination of the two. So that's why I want to take some time today, and I want to make sure that what we're looking for justice, we are truly looking for justice, giving everyone what is his or her due, regardless of race, creed, socioeconomic, whatever. The point has to be, if we are not willing to give others their due, there is no chance for justice in this nation. And that's something that is sorely lacking on both sides of the political spectrum. I've seen it just as much on the right, the left, the conservative, the progressive, whatever term you use. We've lost this concept of justice because we've lost the idea of justice means not I get what I want, I get what I get, what I'm due, but making sure the other person gets what they are due. Now, I'm going to start today with pistol braces. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the term or what I'm talking about, it's an attachment to a pistol that makes it easier to shoot, especially if you have some disability, like if you've only got one hand or you have issues with grip strength. They are designed they don't make the weapon more lethal. What they really do is they make it easier for people to operate them with less than ideal physical characteristics, right? So if you're not familiar, the proper or the best pistol grip involves two hands. So if you've lost an arm or a hand, or if you're like many people, you have other issues that make it harder to hold a pistol properly, that's what the pistol brace is designed to do. And there's several different variations. I've seen some that they strap to the forearm to give you the strength to control them. I've seen others that are designed to tuck into the shoulder, but the idea is they are an accessory to a handgun. They don't turn it into a machine gun. They don't turn it into a rifle. They simply are an accessory to help people more safely and effectively operate a handgun. Now, under President Trump, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Explosives, they've been playing games with the definition of these pistol braces for years. They actually sent a letter to one of the first manufacturers saying, this is fine, it doesn't make it a short-barreled rifle, it doesn't put it under the National Firearms Act. Then that changed, and again, under the Trump administration, suddenly they were trying to ban these braces, and of course, that led to lawsuits and all other sorts of things. But let's, before we get into the lawsuits, let's ask the question, is it just for the government to make a product illegal? Because remember, for a law to be just, it must give to everyone what is their due. Now, again, we're talking about justice. So whether or not you have firearms, whether or not you think that a pistol brace is a good idea, whether or not you like something is immaterial. Because in order to have justice, we must allow others to do what is right. And then, but the same thing is true the other way around, right? So if we, you know, if other people have these things, they cannot use them to harm us. That's, you know, when all my research and study about rights and all that comes down to, you have a right to do something, you don't have the right to use it to harm or restrict the right of another. I go back to the words of George Washington that he said, the very atmosphere of firearms anywhere and everywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor and all that's good. So the idea that we have firearms, we have them for a reason. They're protected by the Second Amendment for a reason. And I would say a very good reason. And that reason is justice. See, reading a quote from Noah Webster, he said, a military force at command of Congress can execute no laws but such as the people perceive to be just and constitutional, for they will possess the power and jealously will instantly inspire the inclination to resist the execution of a law which appears to them unjust and oppressive. Now, notice, Mr. Webster's not talking about hunting or target shooting or competitions. He says, the reason Congress is restrained in their ability to enact and enforce unjust laws is because the people can resist. The purpose of the Second Amendment is among other things, to protect justice, to make sure that no branch of government, no individual, no enemy to justice, foreign or domestic, has unrestrained run through this country because the people can resist. So if you listen to the Constitution study for any length of time, you know, I have guns. I like guns. I think guns are a very important tool. They are not a toy. And in fact, on the situations where I've taught people who are new to guns, we stress very important, very hard. These are not toys. They're not to be played with. They are tools. But then again, when I taught my daughter to drive, I told her, you're in charge of a 2-ton death machine. This is not something you played with. It's not something to be toyed around with. It's something you take very seriously. So let's go back to the pistol braces. Under the current administration, and I believe it actually went all the way back to the Trump administration, they've tried to regulate these pistol braces as short-barreled rifles. Now, an SBR, short-barreled rifle, this idea came in what's called the National Firearms Act. The National Firearms Act was a reaction to a lot of the gang violence, the organized crime violence that was going on during the 20s and 30s, and it was the attempt to, well, let's fix the problem by dealing with the guns. Hasn't really worked that well. Now, why would it? Let's ask the first question. Would it be just to say that a rifle is regulated differently based on the length of its barrel? Well, what does the length of the barrel have to do with it? Well, if it's a shorter rifle, you can conceal it better. Okay, does that mean it is it is just to say we are going to regulate these, because obviously everybody who cuts the barrel of their gun off shortly is planning to commit a crime? No, that's not justice. There are many reasons why somebody might want to take a rifle or a shotgun and make it shorter. One of the reasons is, guess what? A shorter barreled rifle is more effective. It's easier to use in a self-defense situation in a home. Remember, the very same weapon that can be used to commit a crime can also be used to protect you from a crime. So there are a lot of legitimate reasons to have rifles that are shorter, even to have shotguns that are shorter. But we get back to the same question. Okay, so is it just? No. So it's not, the short barrel rifle is an unjust law. And partially because it does not conform with the law. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. The Second Amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't say shall not, well, unless there's a really good reason. So according to, we could pick Alexander Hamilton, Federalist Paper 78, or even the Supreme Court in Ex Parte Siebold, which said an unconstitutional law is void and is as no law. An offense created by it is not a crime. A conviction under it is not merely erroneous, but is illegal and void and cannot be a legal cause of imprisonment. So we're already dealing with unjust laws, right? The short barrel rifle law is an unjust law. Which brings us into the pistol brace. Is the pistol brace making it a short barrel rifle? Again, it doesn't. Now, the quote-unquote rule created up by the ATF defines a rifle as any weapon designed or redesigned, made or remade, and intended to be fired from the shoulder. Now, understand, it's not illegal to own a short-barreled rifle as long as you pay the tax. So that's really what it is. You go through an extra bit of paperwork, you pay an extra tax, and hey, you can own a short-barreled rifle. But let's ask from the beginning, is it just for a bunch of unelected bureaucrats to come up with the definitions for laws? No. So all legislative power is vested in Congress, not in the executive branch and not in the ATF. So that rule, again, it's unjust, it's unconstitutional, it should be treated as void. But let's go on. You know, so we've got the short barrel rifle, we have the rule issue, but we come back to the idea of a pistol brace. Now, yes, there are some pistol braces that are designed to be fired from the shoulder. Why is that a big deal? If I take a handgun and I hold it in such a way that my hand is up against my shoulder, does that suddenly make it a rifle? Oh, well, it wasn't designed or redesigned to shoot from the shoulder. Well, okay, if I take that pistol and I put it in a brace, was the pistol designed or redesigned to shoot from the shoulder? No, it was added to a device that may be used as a shoulder. Not all pistol braces shoot from the shoulder. So let's get back to the lawsuit, right? So obviously you have this rule created by the ATF, which again I say is unjust. It didn't follow the law. It violates the law. The lawsuit ended up at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has issued a preliminary injunction pending appeal. So the rule is not being put in place, but it's pending appeal. And one of the things I've seen a lot of reporting on as this is a win for gun rights groups. I don't see it that way, but it brings up an interesting point. See, you have a group of people who say this law is unjust because it violates the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, which, by the way, also means it violates the concept of self-government, that we the people get to choose the boundaries for our governments when we form them via Constitution. And all the Fifth Circuit has said so far is, listen, we're not going to let this law go into effect. We are saying halt it in our circuit until this case is appealed and we get more details. Again, we're going back to the question of justice in this. And the reason I went through all of that is for you to see we still have not gotten to a just outcome, because the question still remains, will they apply the actual language of the Constitution, the supreme law of the land that we the people have adopted and through our states enacted, saying these are the limits of the federal government and many of the state governments. These are the protections of our rights. And when it says shall not be infringed, it means shall not be infringed. You have a right to keep and bear arms, and that right shall not be infringed, which means any law that infringes on it is unjust. Now, I'm sure the anti-gun groups, their heads are exploding right about now, but understand, I'm not saying that you have a right to use that gun to harm someone. I've owned guns my entire adult life. Not one of them has ever harmed another human being. I've done in some squirrels, but they've never harmed a human being. Why should my right, what I am due, the ability to have arms to defend myself, be restricted because you're afraid that some criminal is going to use them to a bad end? That is not justice. As much as they claim the word justice, that is not justice. That is injustice, because it's literally taking from me a tool to defend myself and my family because you're afraid of it. And I'll be interested to see how this case goes. I will be keeping an eye on it. I have to take a break. Before I do, please head to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can find out everything we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You can ask a question. You can have me answered on the radio. You could join one of our mailing lists. Hey, maybe check out the Patriots program. It's going to be very interesting. I got a lot of things brewing along those lines, and I'd love for you to be able to keep up to date with what's going on. Also, do you ever have a hard time falling asleep, maybe staying asleep? Well, what I do is I reach for Healthy Cells REM Sleep. It's the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep, to help me fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order of Healthy Cell if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please, go to the website, healthycell.com, put your order together, fill your cart, try the REM Sleep. They've got a lot of great products. Focus and Recall, Immune Super Boost are just a couple of them. Put them all in your cart. When you check out, use that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, well, they'll give you 25% off your first order.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited-time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're looking for justice. Not adjective justice, right? Not racial justice, social justice, economic, just plain justice. Giving people what is their due. And the thing about justice is it makes us, if we're going to truly have justice, we have to look out for other people. Justice is not me getting what I want. It's making sure that other people get what is their due. Now, in the first segment, we talked quite a bit about the Second Amendment and gun rights and the pistol brace rule and the case. And I specifically went through a description of the justice issue through the whole scenario. I want to do that again, but this time looking at COVID. Now, most of you have heard, I've heard it repeated way too many times, that because the COVID quote-unquote vaccines were issued under an emergency use authorization, that you were not allowed to sue drug companies for the ill effects. I hate to tell you, but while that might be common knowledge, and it may even be the way the courts are acting, that, ladies and gentlemen, is not true. You see, the First Amendment clearly states that Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievance. When you file a lawsuit, that's what you're doing. You are petitioning the government for a redress of your grievance. You are asking them to look at the case and you're asking them for an opinion. So the law that Congress passed said, oh, by the way, we're going to take responsibility. We're going to, you know, basically give a blanket protection to all vaccine makers. We'll assume it doesn't legally exist. Remember, this time from Norton v. Shelby County, an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no right. It imposes no duty. It affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. So I've been waiting for someone to challenge the nonsense that you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer for the damages done by their fake vaccines when there's obvious malfeasance involved, right? They didn't test it for efficacy. They ignored data about the dangers. Why should we not be able to sue them? Well, legally you can, but you see, no one, because we deal with a quote-unquote justice system that isn't based in justice, it's based in opinion. Some people call it case law. It's opinion of courts. And by the way, you can't be a republic if the laws are controlled not by the people we elect to represent us, but by courts that we have no control over, no say over. Now, a recent twist has popped up, and I wanted to take a little bit of time to kind of contemplate this. There have been some lawsuits filed dealing with vaccine injuries, but it's not against the drug manufacturers. It's actually against the Biden administration. Now, the lawsuit claims, and I believe there's evidence to support it, that, quote, the federal government has launched a war against purported mis, dis, and malinformation, which it claims must be suppressed despite the First Amendment to protect American citizens from supposedly harmful and dangerous ideas. Indeed, defendants admit to suppressing truthful speech, including stories of vaccine side effects that it has expressly acknowledged to be true, but which the government nevertheless targets for censorship because such speech could fuel vaccine hesitancy. So this lawsuit's actually going after the Biden administration for not for the actual damage they did, not for the violation or the suppression of I should say, not for the violation of people's rights by promoting this or by protecting the vaccine manufacturers, but by the fact that they violated the First Amendment by suppressing the speech of those trying to warn people about the harm that they had received. So I find this an interesting tact. I don't know if this is part of a larger set of lawsuits, but it is interesting because it's going after the federal government for, again, its own malfeasance. They list under the basic principles, the First Amendment protects Americans' right to express, hear, and read perspectives that are controversial, outside the mainstream, and differ from the government messaging. Those are all absolutely true. It's the effect. The actual language of it, of the First Amendment, says Congress cannot suppress the freedom of speech or of the press, the ability to publish. The second basic principle, the First Amendment secures Americans' freedom of expressive association, including the right to form and freely communicate within private groups without abridgment by the government. Okay, I'd also give them that one. The government may not use private companies to accomplish what it cannot do directly. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is critical. This is critical. Norwood v. Harrison, it is axiomatic that the government may not induce, encourage, or promote private persons to accomplish what it is constitutionally forbidden to accomplish. This is the idea of the federal government can't get someone else to do what they are not legally allowed to do. And that's what we saw, what's been coming out in the Twitter files and others, that the federal government used third parties to do what the government's not allowed to do. Now, Twitter and Facebook and all of these social media companies are private entities. Yes, they are publicly traded for the most part, but they are private entities. They are owned by shareholders. They have the right to determine what content is on their platform. It is their servers. It is their software. They have the right to determine what that is. What they don't, what the government doesn't have the right to do is to induce, encourage, or promote them to do what the federal government is not allowed to do. The federal government, the Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. The federal government cannot encourage someone to do it for them. And the evidence that's been coming out in the Twitter files shows that's exactly what they did. Now, what does this have to do with justice? If you have a right to speak, print what you want, to get access to information that you want, is it just for you to be denied that because the state doesn't like what you're saying? Because the government doesn't like what you're promoting. See, that's think of it this way. One, you have the right to freely speak, right? You have the right to express these ideas. But think of it this way. What about the consumers? This lawsuit makes the point that it is your due. It is just for you to be able to access contrary information, controversial information outside the quote unquote mainstream, and information the government doesn't want you to see. The whole idea that the government can determine, can break the law because, well, we're doing it for a good reason. The ends justify the means. That is an idea that has been introduced, it has become so prevalent in our society that, well, the ends justify, you can break the law as long as you're doing it for a good reason. Now, I want to take this back a little bit farther, because I will trace this back actually to the current Supreme Court, the current court understanding of judicial review. Now, if you study the Constitution for a while, you're sure to come across somebody that claims that Marbury versus Madison is where the Supreme Court assumed the power to declare laws unconstitutional and have them null and void. They use the term judicial review. I've proven that's not true. Go to my website, constitutionstudy.com. Look up Marbury v. Madison. I did a whole article on that particular case. The term judicial review is used, right? I think it was Chief Justice Marshall wrote the opinion, said that, yes, we need to review the laws. It's what, when we have cases before us, we need to review all the laws so that we can decide what to do. And then to say, well, if a law is in conflict with the Constitution, we must side with the Constitution. It says nothing about invalidating the law. It says nothing about finding them, about basically overturning the law, it says nothing. But look at modern judicial review. In fact, if you want an interesting one, there's a website I use frequently called the Free Legal Dictionary. It's my go-to place when I'm looking up, when I'm trying to research legal terms and whatnot. It's legal-dictionary.thefreedictionary.com. And if you look up strict scrutiny, you'll find it says a standard of judicial review for a challenged policy in which the court presumes the policy to be invalid unless the government can demonstrate a compelling interest to justify the policy. Now, notice that. The very idea of this strict scrutiny, again, which is, it goes on to explain, it's one of the three levels of judicial review and whatnot. But notice what it's saying. It's going to presume that the action is unconstitutional. It is invalid. But it will allow the government to show, well, we've got a good reason for it. We're breaking the law, but we've got a good reason for it. I don't know about you, but right there, we've got a problem. Because what you have is a supposedly judicial branch, a branch supposedly divided around justice, saying not that the law is unconstitutional, but that it's unconstitutional, but we're going to leave it because, well, we think they've come up with a good reason. Now tell me, ladies and gentlemen, how is that justice? If the representatives of the people passed a law that violates the supreme law of the land adopted by the people, by the states, why does a court get to decide whether or not their reasoning was good enough? If there's a problem with the law, if there's a problem with the Constitution, then let's fix it. But this has been turned so far to the point where the government the courts are literally telling the government, we will let you violate the Constitution as long as you give us a good enough reason. The interesting thing is those reasons frequently have nothing to do with the actual legitimate purpose of the government entity at hand. It's things that powers we have not delegated to that particular branch of government. Where is justice there? Because if all it takes is the government saying, well, you had a really good reason. Let's take a look at some of the stuff that's been coming out of the Durham report. And in this report, we have found, among other things, that the FBI ignored exculpatory information while they were going through their faux Russia hoax probe. Now, exculpatory means it proves innocence. So imagine you are the target of some of this information. Say, Donald Trump or one of his cohorts. The FBI has been spending years investigating, leaking information, basically making your life miserable. And you find out now, years later, that they had evidence that this never happened. Evidence of your innocence. And they ignored it. How is that just? That is not just. But you see, if we take the court's use of judicial review, they could look at it and say, well, the FBI had a really good reason to ignore the exculpatory evidence to go through this probe, because the damage that could be done if Donald Trump was actually a Russian agent, even though we had evidence that he wasn't, it would be so damaging, we need to be able to do it even though it violates the law, it violates the Constitution, it violates the very basics of a free and just society, but we had a really good reason, folks. We really, really did. Do you see why just plain justice is so important? Do you see why the statue of justice is blindfolded, holding scales to be fair, and blindfolded, to not look at who is being judged? Because if someone can come to you and say, well, we're going to treat you differently because you're a Republican, or you're a person we really don't like, or because you're connected with Donald Trump, or because of the color of your skin, or because of your nationality, or because of your socioeconomic background, or simply because of your sex, your gender. If we're going to treat people differently based on that, that is not justice. That is the definition of injustice. And this idea of justice has been turned on its head in so many places in this country. I don't have time to get to all of them. I was just thinking about, was this reparations? Let us punish people who did no wrong to reward people that were not wronged. That is the definition of injustice. But in certain parts of this country, that is going hog wild. The idea that people who did no wrong must be punished for some, not only for something they did not do, but they must pay off the people who were not actually wronged, or at least could prove no wrong. Justice, ladies and gentlemen, is critical. Because if we don't have just plain justice, sooner or later, you're going to be on the short end of the stick in somebody's situation, whether it's somebody's case, whether it's somebody's life, whether it's just how you go about living your life. It could be anything from getting into university to the job you have to, well, your right to exercise your very own rights. Now, I focus a lot on the feds in this segment. I want to take a look at some things going on in the state as well, but I have to take another break. Before I go, though, I want to remind you, the Constitution Study is just one of many voices heard on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So do like I do. Go to AmericaOutLoud.com every day to find out the news and goings on. I also share that information. I want you to do that as well. I take the articles, the stories, the podcasts, the videos. I post them on social media. I post them among others, and I want you to do the same thing as well. See, part of the reason why these fake justices, the idea that justice is racial or economic, the reason they survive is because no one ever shows the other side of the story. And that's what you can do. You can join us in doing that. And believe it or not, it's not simply just participating in the Republic or in our conversation. See, by sharing information, by sharing the truth, the rock-bottom truth of justice, you're also helping to secure not only justice, but all of the blessings of liberty to everyone in this great country.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutLoud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio, the liberty and justice for all.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on all the fear-mongering, but deep down you try and minimize viral exposure and your risk of getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine nasal solution. I don't need to tell you just how powerful a nasal cleansing formula with xylitol, povidone iodine, and vitamin D3 for immune support could be. In fact, my attorney told me not to tell you. Google it and find out for yourself. Now, get yourself a bottle of American-made Cofix RX nasal solution. Let's get out and live again. CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com. Use coupon code OUTLOUD and get 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about just plain justice. Now, we talked a bit about what's been going on at the federal level with court cases and whatnot, but I want to take a look now at what's going on at the state level. I found this article. There's a school in Massachusetts, the Middleborough Public Schools, and they're being sued. Why are they being sued? Well, a young man, Liam Morris, I believe is his name, he went to school wearing a shirt that said, "There are only two genders." By the way, acting principal Heather Tucker forced him to go home. This happened back in March. See, he politely declined to remove his shirt that said there are only two genders, and the school sent him home. By the way, the district lawyers also said that if he came in, if he wore that shirt again, he would also be sent home. So the next day he shows up and he's wearing a shirt that said there are censored genders. I don't know if this kid is doing it on his own or if he's getting some help for his parents, but I actually like that. That was a nice little dig in there. Of course, his teacher sent him to the principal's office. He took off his shirt on the way to the office and said he wouldn't put it on because he didn't want to miss another day of school. Now, the Alliance Defending Freedom has filed this lawsuit for them. They're acting as their attorneys, citing violations of both the First and 14th Amendments. I've said it over and over again. This cannot be a First Amendment issue. Why? Because Congress didn't make this law. However, it is a 14th Amendment issue. By the way, it's also an issue under Massachusetts Constitution. You see, under Article, 77, I believe, of the Massachusetts Constitution, we read, by the way, it's that high because it was an amended from a previous amendment. It says a liberty of press is essential to the security of freedom in a state. It ought not therefore to be restrained in this commonwealth. The right of free speech shall not be abridged. So what you have is he's publishing a message. This student is publishing a message on his shirt: freedom of the press. So again, it's also a violation of the 14th Amendment because it is denying him equal protection under the law. Other messages are allowed in the school. They just don't like this one. And we're waiting to see if this student gets justice. What's interesting is they are actually seeking what's called actual and nominal damages. I believe what this means, they're not looking for a payday. And I think that is just. I really do. And again, I want to follow this because it's understanding this boy, he's 12 years old, right? He has rights. He has the right to publish information without censorship from the government. It's protected under state constitution. It's protected under the federal constitution as equal protection laws. He's being denied a property he has in his rights. He's being denied liberty to express his own ideas. That's the 14th Amendment issues, right? But the question is, will he receive justice? I'm curious. We should follow this. Because in order for what the school did to be just, they have to show that somehow this message actually harmed or denied the rights of somebody else. Now, it may have made them upset, but that's too darn bad. See, part of justice means you have to allow other people to express ideas you don't like. We don't suppress ideas simply because we don't like them. That's not a violation of your rights. You don't have a right to not be offended, because that would require you to suppress the rights of someone else. Look, this is Massachusetts. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. What's next? California. California, which has really, really been good at, finding ways to be unjust or unjust. Now, in this case, we're talking about law AB 979, which was passed in September of 2020, and the proponents of the bill claim that it was intended to address corporate discrimination against underrepresented communities. The idea is it required a minimum number of people from a designated racial, ethnic, or LGBT background to have a seat on corporate boards. It was a quota system for corporate boards in California. And they said, well, listen, we're trying to address corporate discrimination against these underrepresented communities. First of all, how about you have proof that there actually was discrimination? See, if you want justice, you can't simply say, I don't like the makeup of your corporate board. I think it needs to look this way. Therefore, I'm going to force you to. Justice would have to show that you have denied people of quote unquote underrepresented communities a seat on the board. And again, not because they were not the most qualified candidate, but because of their because of unjust discrimination. Now, the plaintiffs, which is a nonprofit membership organization composed of individuals who do not self-identify as one of the groups listed in AB 979. They said that the law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, along with several federal laws. Now, reading from the opinion of, where did this come from? This came from the District Court for Eastern District of California. And in their analysis, they said the plaintiff contends that AB 979 must be invalidated because it is unconstitutional on its face. Plaintiff states that defendant concedes that the bill imposes racial classifications and requires covered corporations to have a set minimum number of directors from a select racial and ethnic pool, which constitutes a race-based quota, despite defendant's semantic argument that it only sets a flexible floor for diversity. Plaintiff argues that such quotas are per se unconstitutional, according to an established Supreme Court precedent. A little farther on, the court finds that plaintiff's facial challenge to AB 979 must be affirmed. The Supreme Court defines a quota as a program in which a certain fixed number or proportion of opportunities are reserved exclusively for certain minority groups. So, okay, they came right out and said, listen, this is a facially challenged, it is facially unconstitutional, because the Supreme Court says so. Now, personally, what I find interesting is the Equal Protection Clause. I don't know. Maybe I haven't gone into the details of the Supreme Court opinion that they were basing this on, but to me, it's more of a question of, isn't it a deprivation of property without due process of law? See, the board members, the board seats, belong to the corporation, not the state. So to deprive control of the membership of that those seats is a deprivation of the property they have in those seats without due process of law. Now, the court's already found, yes, facially, this law is unconstitutional. And the court goes on to say, for this reason, the reason set forth, this court grants plaintiff's motion for summary judgment. It is so ordered, meaning it's thrown out. It's gone. It's done as far as the court is concerned. And again, they said it was blatant, but understand, this law was passed in September of 2020. That means we've had three quarters of a year of this unjust, racist law in California. It took us almost 3 years for a court to finally say, no, you can't, you're not allowed to do that. Of course, the question then becomes, is this going to be appealed to the circuit court or the Supreme Court? I don't know. But I want you to see justice delayed is justice denied. It's a topic I'm going to talk about over the next several days. But understand, the justice of these companies being forced or being held under their own sort of Damocles of do this or else, that justice has been delayed for a fair amount of time. Now, granted, we have what we laughably call a justice system to deal with such things. But really, shouldn't this have been dealt with at the beginning? Shouldn't somebody in the process of drafting and passing AB 979 had looked at it and said, it is inherently unjust for us to tell people who they can and cannot have on their boards, tell corporations who they can and cannot have on their boards, to tell the people that own the corporation or who run the corporation who they can and cannot have on their boards? And since we've lost this basic concept of justice, we had to wait almost 3 years for a court to say, yeah, you know what? You can't actually do that. I want to take this down, well, to the personal level, to you and to me and to each and every individual American. See, if we're truly going to have justice, it's not going to come from Washington, D.C., or your state capitol, or the courts, or your county. It's going to really start in each and every individual. Now, I want to play for you a clip. I've cut this out of Tim Scott, who recently announced he's running for nomination for president. He was interviewed on MSNBC, and a series of clips was being reviewed by The View. And Joy Behar made an interesting comment about both Mr. Scott and Justice Clarence Thomas.
So he is not pro-choice. And he's one of these guys who, you know, he's like Clarence Thomas, black Republican who believes in pulling yourself by your bootstraps, rather than, to me, understanding the systemic racism that African Americans face in this country and other minorities. He doesn't get it, neither does Clarence.
Right.
And that's why they're Republicans.
Now, I want to ask this. I want to look at this from the point of justice. Is it just, is it right, is it proper to say these people disagree with me? They disagree with me on abortion. She uses the euphemism pro-choice. It's a lie. They disagree with me on the history of racism and where it sits today, and whether or not there are systems of racism built into the product. Therefore, that's why he's a Republican. And you know what? That's probably true. These two gentlemen are Republicans because they disagree with the ideas that. Not because of the Joy Behar, because the ideas Joy Behar are promoting are antithetical to their understanding of what is a Republican versus what is a Democrat. But it's really given as a, I don't know, it reminds me of this line from President Biden during the 2020 campaign.
But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
In other words, it's the presupposition that simply because of the color of your skin, you should hold certain ideas. You should be pro-abortion. You should assume a victimhood status, that everything is the fault of systemic racism, that you shouldn't say, regardless of the issues against me, it is my responsibility to figure it out for myself, to do what I can to make my life better. Is it just for people to judge people that way? To look at someone like a Tim Scott or a Clarence Thomas, and because of the color of their skin, assume they're going to vote a certain way, or assuming they're going to support certain ideas and concepts. And that, to me, is the point I want to leave you with today. See, if we want justice, we need to stop looking for others to give us justice. If we want justice, we start by giving justice to others, to giving them what is their due. That includes respecting their ideas enough to not simply denigrate them because you disagree with them. To look at someone like a Tim Scott or a Clarence Thomas and maybe ask, why do you hold these positions? It's one of the reasons why I love Thomas Sowell, because whenever you listen to him speak and he talks about his position, he always seems to come up with data to support the assumptions he's making, or the assertions he's making. That is justice, to not simply disagree with him because you're not holding my point of view. It's the same, by the way, injustice that we saw with the Massachusetts student who's not allowed to express an opinion because, well, it's not supported by apparently the principal and, who knows, other people at the school. If we want justice, we start by giving justice, by treating others justly. That includes defending their right to disagree with us, defending their right to be wrong in our opinion. And that includes the right to challenge their opinion with facts and data. If you're just bouncing opinion versus opinion, we're not going to get anywhere. But the idea of saying, you know what, that's your opinion, that doesn't make it a fact. And to counter that with the facts and data. To not simply say,
I reject your reality and substitute my own.
See, that's not justice. That's what leads to things like social justice, economic justice, racial justice, you name it. That's the adjective justice. The justice says, you have an opinion. You have the right to try to convince me that you're right and I'm wrong. But to simply to substitute your reality for whatever anyone else is thinking is wrong. To assume things about people because of the color of their skin or their sex or their nationality, that's wrong. That's not just. And if we wish to establish justice, that was the goal, one of the goals of the framers of the Constitution was to establish justice. Well, then it's our job to work to establish justice, to do the work necessary to establish justice. And that starts with treating people justly. And that may even include defending something or someone you disagree with because it's the right, it's the just, it's the American thing to do. Now, I hope you'll come again and join us here at the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, heard in America Out Loud Talk Radio on the iHeartRadio Network. And hey, maybe bring along a few friends. Can't listen then? That's fine. All of my episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave me a rating or a review. It helps other people find the Constitution Study, especially as the subscriptions go up, we end up higher in the list when people are searching for this type of content. And of course, they'll look at a rating and review and say, maybe I'll listen to that because it's got a good rating or a good review. Now, you can find all the links to the program, the podcast there at the homepage of AmericaOutloud.com. But I hope you'll do more than just go there yourself. I hope you'll share this information. Share the links, share the podcast, share the ideas we talk about. Help give people the opportunity to hear what's going on in the world from a constitutional point of view. And if you share that information, you're not simply spreading the word about the Constitution Study. Oh, no, no. You're also helping to share the blessings of liberty throughout this great country from sea to shining sea.